Welcome to the Melrose Place podcast, where we rewatch, recap, and analyze every single episode of that hit 90s TV series, Melrose Place.
I'm Jenny Hill.
I'm Dan Hill.
Let's get it started.
Episode 12, The Doctor That Rocks the Cradle. Air date, November 28th, 1994. Man, oh man.
Oh, we open.
We built up to this.
Yeah, this is a good one. And we open on an active crime scene.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the Los Angeles County Police Department on the scene.
A lot of mustache only cops.
Yeah, a lot of mustaches, a lot of old school walkie-talkies.
Yeah.
And we have a problem,
a major
guys.
Scene.
I mean, a woman did run over a man slash boy on a bike.
Yeah. That's serious. That's very serious. Allison's out of the car. Her eyes are glassy. She's like, there's no way I could avoid him. I wasn't. He came out of nowhere.
It's so dark. Oh, I don't know. I mean, this is not my fault. This is not my fault.
She's neurotic. She's so nervous. She's just saying just over and over, there's no way that she could avoid it.
Now, we do learn that the little boy slash child wasn't gravely injured. There seems to be no broken bones, but he sure looks dead on that gurney.
Oh, he looks hella dead.
He's lifeless, yeah. Laying on that gurney as they're loading him into the ambulance.
If he's not dead, he's near it.
So the police officer talking to Alice and says, okay, ma'am, everything's fine. Before we take your statement, we just need to get a breathalyzer.
What? Wait, what?
You mean a sobriety test?
What are you? Is that necessary?
Yeah, it's just policy. We're just going to quickly, you're just going to blow into this device and then we'll continue to take your statement.
She's super concerned.
I don't think this is necessary.
Just blow into it. So she blows. Cop looks at the meter, pops out his flashlight, shines him in those glazy eyes, and then tells her to turn the fuck around.
Hands on the hood of the car. We're taking out the old bracelets and slapping them on.
Yeah, she's going down for DUI, and then Allison rolls right into her. Oh, God. Oh, Jesus. Oh, my God. Oh, fuck. Oh, man, this is really happening. Oh,
and
God.
Then we get the opening credits.
Then police station. Allison needs to make a phone call, but not before a very, like, fucking weird
spider tattoo inmate. Attitude lady.
Yeah. Where is she from?
Yeah, she's making a phone call and she like slams the receiver down and she's got like spider webs all over tattooed on her arms and she's like,
I would not want to be her cellmate.
Giving a lot of attitude to everybody. And then contrastly, Allison walks in looking like a Sunday school teacher with like her little white button-up cardigan with the long floral skirt.
Yeah. I feel like they wouldn't put her in there with old Gen Pop. You know?
Oh, I don't know.
A drunk tank. You'd go to a drunk tank. You know?
I don't have a lot of experience.
Maybe
with
that
going
is the drunk tank, I guess.
To police stations, Dan.
Yeah. I from what I hear, I've never gotten a DUI or anything, but like I thought you'd go into like a sort of a minimal, not the real crazy.
Not the old clink.
Yeah, just the other drunkies.
Well, we cut to Billy and Susan, and they're having a little smoochy moment. And Susan is like, Billy, we're going to have some time alone together this weekend, even if it means going to a motel in Bakersfield.
Can we talk about all the shit that's on Billy's bed?
I didn't notice.
While they're hanging out. Like, there's like magazines, newspapers, they're in like They definitely wear socks to bed.
Ugh.
Which is a very,
I don't know. I can't have anything on my feet when I'm sleeping.
No. Absolutely
like,
not.
You know how like some people like to get all tucked in where like your sheets are tucked under the mattress and it's like your feet are trapped?
Mm-hmm.
I can't do it.
No, I'm not into that either.
I have to free my feet.
I go to a hotel room.
Yeah, you got
to
rip
it
off.
Pull it all off.
Yeah, yeah.
Pull it all off. So they're, yeah, like Jenny said, they're all smooching up and they get the phone call.
Yeah, and then it's Allison calling from the old jail.
$500 bail. Billy, she's like, Billy, you better pay it. Help me. And of course, Billy, well, not of course. Billy says like, yeah, of course, I'll help you. But I'm surprised that this is Allison's phone call.
Me too. There's nobody else she can call.
She should call Jane.
Yeah, I guess.
Jane doesn't hate her.
Because, I mean, Joe hates her.
Yeah, Joe hates her. She's a business. Jane's like, has her own business. She's got 500. Or does she?
I don't know.
But still, Jane is the better call here.
Right, I agree. But, you know, Billy is like, fine, I'll come there this afternoon. He hangs up. Susan's really eager to know what was going on, who was on the phone. And he just says, well, looks like our plans are canceled this weekend. I got to get Allison out of jail.
Got to get her out.
And it's like, how does that ruin your whole weekend? You just go bail her out and then you can go do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, just go get her, drop her off. Yeah, you don't have to.
You can still go to Bakersfield.
Yeah. Now we head over to Mancini Designs. And speaking of Jane, her and Chris are just like on their hands and knees.
Well, they said that they were rushing back from the airport. So I don't know where they were. But they apparently, while they were gone, a lot of mail has come into Jane Mancini Designs. And they come across the check. They came straight from the airport to get this check. And I was super surprised that this $500,000 actually existed.
And it's a check for the expansion of Mancini Designs. And Chris says that he will go deposit the check.
Yeah. And I mean, we've been hearing about this check for a couple of episodes now. And I thought it was just total bullshit. Like, I thought that it was just Chris making it up. But I'm really surprised that he has a legit benefactor or company that is fronting the money, actually.
Well, I'd assume that this has been his plan the whole time. He's going to find a business that's just starting, find someone impressionable who doesn't know a lot of what she's doing, befriend her, hook up with her, marry her, rape her sister, and then also make that business good. And then get this other investor and then steal the money.
That's a really intricate, well thought out plan.
Yeah. It takes a little turn for the weird with the whole rape situation. But otherwise, it's masterful.
So we are at D&D now, where Amanda is conducting a staff meeting in the conference room. And absent again is Allison, because she's out of the office. But one thing that I'm getting is that I think this is over the Thanksgiving Day holiday. So she called an emergency meeting and made everybody come into work.
Bitch. Bitch of the week.
Yeah, to discuss like some shit going on at D&D. Like, this is like the Friday.
Yeah.
After Thanksgiving.
And in this meeting, she yanks Allison off of an account, and then Amanda's like talking to Billy, and she needs a right-hand man, and she can't count on Allison anymore. But as things move forward, she's looking at Billy for that support.
Yeah, Billy is supposed to be like her guy. They're going to move up the ranks of D&D together. And Billy doesn't really seem too enthused about this prospect.
He's very hostile towards her. And I even wrote, why the hostility? I don't remember them being mad at each other or anything.
Who can keep it straight?
But yeah, he's just like, why don't you talk to Allison? What's your deal? And it's just very strange that he's so off on Amanda.
Yeah. So next up, we are with Allison and Billy, and she's complaining about how she's been in jail. And she goes into her apartment, and the first thing she does is pulls out that trusty bottle of vodka and pours herself a stiff drink.
And she's like, oh, I need a hot shower. And then she's like, hey, Billy, why don't you spend the night?
She tries to get Billy to spend the night. And of course, he disapproves of her coming home. The first thing she's doing is drinking. And she's like, this is like the, he says, isn't this the last thing that you need? And she's like, actually the reverse.
This is the best thing I need. Yeah. You kidding me? I'm hungover right now. I need a little hair of the dog. But what the hell is going on? Why does she want Billy so hard right now?
And then she's like, Billy, you can even sleep on the couch. You don't need to sleep in the room with me. And he's like, no, I have plans with Susan. I'm not going to spend the night. And really, you need to be alone and clear your head and think about what you've done.
And then she's like, oh, well, yeah, don't mind me. I just spent the night in jail.
And then Billy fires back with, yeah, why don't you think about the kid that had to spend the night in the hospital? Think about that. And it's like, Allison is being such a selfish little jerk.
She's got nothing to say.
She ran over a man slash child because
it was a child. She ran over, it was a stunt man for one shot. They couldn't have the kid fall off the bike. It was a kid. No man is riding the bike.
I don't know. Thanksgiving it was night. Very ambiguous to me.
No, it's a kid. It was a kid on the stretcher. So Peter and Amanda, they're having a power breakfast or something.
No, he says, you're referring to...
Power is the breakfast of champions.
Exactly. That's the line that he delivers to Amanda.
But they're talking more and more. Every single conversation about like D&D takeovers gets like super hot with them.
Oh yeah, and it turns them on. So she's like,
did you go to work tonight? Did you go to work today? Yeah, I went to work. Ooh, take off your shirt.
So Peter says to Amanda, you need to keep me apprised of everything that's going on at D&D.
By the way, want to wear this? He pulls out some lingerie. And Peter wants her to start watching Bruce extra close because he's a desperate man.
Next scene, we're back at the hospital. And there is a woman in a hospital bed, and she's not doing so good. Kimberly comes in, and she's trying to comfort this woman, but we can tell that she's up to something because she's looking around. She pulls the curtain back to give the woman and herself privacy, and the woman is clutching to her stomach as if she has a baby there. And we find out that this woman is Mrs. Cortez and that she has to deliver a stillborn the next day, which that's got to be the worst.
Yeah, that probably really sucks.
Knowing that your baby is...
deadzo.
Yeah. So Kimberly is feigning all of this concern and, oh, I just want to tell you as a representative from the hospital, I'm so sorry and we're here for you and just it's going to be better. But really, we know that this is somehow mixed in with her master plan.
Kimberly goes to Joe and Joe isn't due for 2 more weeks. But Kimberly's got that stillborn in the wings. Ready to go.
So we learn
she's
what
like,
her...
I got my dead baby.
Oh my
now
God.
I need my live baby.
We learn what her little master plan is. So Mrs. Cortez is going to deliver the stillborn tomorrow. And she wants to induce Joe the next day as well at the beach house. And then she's going to go back to the hospital.
Little baby swap.
Tell him that, you know, Joe delivered the baby was dead, and then she's going to take the Cortez baby and pawn it off as the Reynolds baby and have it cremated.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no evidence.
And alongside of that, the story that Kimberly and Joe are going to deliver to Jake is that they're going to Santa Barbara for some R&R. And Kimberly... like, Joe's like, are you sure we have to do this? Like, don't you think I should deliver it at the hospital? And Kimberly has to remind her like an idiot, like, no, dude, if you deliver it anywhere else, they're going to take your baby.
She just says, consider the alternatives. The Carters are waiting.
Yeah. She says, you have no choice. So Joe's like, all right, well, I'll make the next
The arrangements.
So she books a one-way to New York. She calls the airport by heart once again.
Or the travel agent.
Yeah, and she's like, one to New York, please, with 1-day-old baby. Which you cannot do.
Well, they advise against
it's
putting
very frowned upon.
Very little newborn on a plane.
Yeah. So now we've got Allison rocking a no-call, no-show at work. That's immediate termination.
Well, okay, no, Dan, I've thought about this a little bit. I don't think it's a no-call, no-show. Amanda left messages for her to come in for this emergency meeting over the Thanksgiving holiday. It's the 90s. She may have not been by her phone. She could have been out of town.
Oh, did that excuse work? Answering machines. Could have checked your answering machine.
I don't know. Well, that's Amanda's. That's how she's coming at Allison. Like, right. Oh, well, nice to see you. You didn't make it to the meeting.
Allison needed time to be alone. And then Amanda tells Allison that she put Tom on the Linden account. And then Allison has the nerve to be like, oh, what? That was my account. I worked so hard for that. Bitch. No, you didn't. Now you didn't. You're not there. You're not at the work.
And Allison continues to say, well, I have a lot of good reasons as to why I wasn't present at the meeting. And Amanda's had it. She's like, I'm sick of all of your little good reasons, Allison. You're not here for the company. Whatever's going on in your own life, you need to figure it out. But you keep going down this path and you are gone.
God, I feel bad. I feel bad for Allison. And I also understand Amanda's situation because, one, coming from, like, if you live at home, your home is your sanctuary away from work. It's a place that you can, you know, you leave work. They say leave it at the door. You know, when you leave work, you go home. You don't have to worry about work. But Allison's boss is also her landlord and lives, like, 15 steps away.
And she's always making little house calls. Like,
so she like bangs on her fucking door and is like, hey, this is work stuff. Like, I would not, if I was Allison, I would not put up with that shit.
Yeah, I would.
I wouldn't answer the door.
I would have quit D&D like five episodes ago.
100% quit. But like now that she hasn't, I would open the door and before Amanda would get a word out, I'd be like, hey, let's talk about this at work. Okay, bye. I'm at home.
Yeah.
I'm at home. This is my safe place. You know?
Yeah, I hear you. But at the same time, Allison has taken a lot of liberties being at work being at work.
She takes days off to go shopping. She tells the truth. So Amanda just chews her out at her door and we leave them in sort of an issue.
Now it's the next day and this is it, guys. It's the delivery day.
Kimberly and Joe.
Yeah. So they are leaving. And one thing that Kimberly did take care to mention is that they need to have an alibi. They need somebody to see them leave together. And they lucked out because Jake is just leaving his apartment the same time they're walking down the stairs.
And they're terrible at alibis. This is like two kids lying to their dad.
Well, especially Joe. She is super nervous. She keeps stumbling over her words.
It's like, we're going to Santa Barbara. And Jake's like, I didn't realize you guys were friends.
We're like, even friends. What are you doing? Well, pregnancy just bonds women together, doesn't it? Yeah, so we're deciding to take a little day off and spend the day together.
And then Jake is basically like, well, that doesn't sound like you, Joe. You're like a workaholic. And then Joe literally says, that's me. work, work, work. I'm so, like, I'd be like, grab her. I'd be like, what's up? Do you need like a safe place? Like, is someone, is this a cry for help?
Well, I think Jake actually buys it, and then he just tells them to have fun, and they're off on their merry way.
But he says, Joe, take it easy.
Relax or else.
Relax. Or else what, Jake? You're going to sick your...
You don't even want to know.
You're going to sick the mob on her? Now we go to Amanda at Bruce's place. And Bruce's place is dope.
Is it?
Oh, it's badass, man. That's a baller house. It's on a great neighborhood. It's on a great street. Did you see the street?
I saw the street.
The house is huge.
The carpet was a little too white for me.
Okay, we could change the carpet. We don't have to move in. I'm just saying, the house is nice. So they're there. Bruce says that they're going to merge. He drops this news on her. He's like, we're going to merge with Banfield and Lee and be the largest ad firm in Southern California. I don't know why Bruce is Oprah right now.
Right, so this is like D&D saving grace. He has this handshake deal with the higher-ups over at this Banfield and Lee firm. He's super excited about it, and he wants to let Amanda know because she has been so instrumental in this crisis that they're having at D&D.
Yep.
And he wants to kind of bring her into the fold and let her know that when everything goes through, she's going to be getting a very healthy raise. Although, she's not going to move up in her position, yet Bruce will not only continue to be the president of D&D, but he will also be on the board of the parent company and have control over the whole conglomeration of the whole operation. So, of course, Amanda is not one.
They'll still be intact as a subdivision.
Right.
Yeah. So Amanda's like, oh, great. And you can tell in the back of her head, she's like, how does this affect me and Peter being like the lead stockholder thing? So Amanda leaves Bruce's place and immediately she gets to her car, picks up her car phone, and calls Peter and lets her know what the deal is.
Gotta keep him in the loop.
So now we head over to the beach house. Creepy nurse Maria...
Rhea.
Okay. Take it easy.
Her name is Rhea.
Yeah, what is she, your cousin? Hey, don't you fucking mess up Rhea's name. All right.
And watch, her name is really Maria.
Okay, sorry. I'm very sorry. Jenny has an emotional connection to Rhea. Kimberly asks Maria/Rhea, whatever her name is, to shut the blinds.
Right, so Rhea is Kimberly's assistant that has, quote, been with her a long time, close quote. So I'm like, what is she doing with Rhea? Like,
yeah, what does this mean? Like, oh, we've
done this before.
We've like, lost seven we've, babies.
We've delivered a lot of children together.
Illegally.
And illegally. And so...
In this house, in this bed. And this is my go-to illegal baby making.
And Joe is in the bed. She's very nervous. And Kimberly's just trying to calm her and let her know everything's going to be okay.
And in Michael's bed, in like their bed.
Yeah. And there's no like room? Plastic sheets or anything. Like they're just going for it. They're like right there on the regular sheets. Dan.
Where's Michael?
I know you saw a lot of what happened. I thank goodness. Didn't have a mirror, get to see what was happening in the childbirth department, but I think it gets pretty messy.
Yes.
So that bed, just right off that bed, it's done.
Yeah, you're going to need a whole new bed. Fucking sheets, cushion, box spring, and probably carpet under.
And so Kimberly motions to this little side table with like all of these medical instruments. And she's like, Joe, once I inject you, the contractions will start and you will start needing to push. And Joe asks, well, how long can it take? Well, it can take longer than 36 hours.
That's a long time.
But I hope that we can have the baby within 4 to 5. And I'm kind of like, did she think this out? Like, 36 hours? That's like a day and a half. Does she have to be at work?
Maybe.
That's a long time.
Maybe she can call out sick. But they just get going with this thing. And it's really intense.
And she's just told, relax and remember why we're doing it this way.
Remember why. Know your why.
So next scene, we see a shot of the Melrose Place pool. And Jane and Chris are stepping out on the town. They have that half a mil and they want to celebrate. So as they're leaving, they run into Jake and Sydney. Not the best couple to see, although they tried to patch things up a couple of episodes ago. And Chris has this dumb little throwaway remark as Jane is leaving. He was like, oh, don't worry. Sydney and I kissed and made up just for you, Jake.
Don't worry.
Why don't you try it?
No, you're really nailing it.
It's like really turning into like Oliver.
Oi, don't worry, Jane.
Don't worry, Jane. Please, can I have some more?
Sounds like fucking Bob Cratchit. Oi, don't worry. I just want to say that for the record, Maria is played by Anna Mercedes. Okay. I don't know what Jenny heard about Rhea. I don't know who this Rhea person is.
I could have sworn it was Rhea.
But Anna Mercedes, who plays Maria, is known for The West Wing. She was in Knocked Up. She was on The Arrow. On the CW. She's in the SWAT TV series. She's working. She's on Vita right now. She plays Senora Benitez. She's on True Detective.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, that's a great show. Damn, she is like, she's killing it right now.
Sorry, Maria.
Oh, in 2007, she played Kate in the Itty Bitty Titty Committee.
That one was under my radar, unfortunately.
Yeah, she's killing it. So go you, Anna Mercedes.
So next scene, we're back at the beach house and we are in labor with Joe. She
Big time.
Is panting. She's sweating. She's crying. She's like giving it all she's got.
Yeah.
Kimberly is knelt down.
Come on, Joe, push.
I see the head. Come on, come on.
And then Joe pops out that baby boy and it's a real infant.
It's a real baby.
I thought they were going to go voice track.
Yeah.
And just hand her a little baby doll.
Yeah, but it's an infant.
It's a baby.
Yeah, and she's holding him. And Kimberly is like, quick, we've got to get her to the hospital. Okay, Maria, you take the baby.
I wonder how that works, like logistically, with getting that young of an infant on set. To be the like baby that's delivered.
There's a lot of rules. There's a lot of crazy things. Like it can only be on camera for like 10 minutes or something crazy.
Tara, like, how do you cast that thing?
Tara told me about it for when she was working on the American Sniper.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah, with American Sniper, like...
They ended up using fake babies because they couldn't adhere to the strict rules that you have to...
Yeah, they're like, fuck this.
Yeah.
And you could tell. It was pretty shitty. You could definitely tell it wasn't a real baby. But like, yeah, like as a mother, you just had your kid. Could you just hand it off to some like PA, producer, or whatever to like be in a scene?
Well, you're probably there, but it's a new, I mean, that baby was probably under 2 weeks old.
Yeah.
So that's...
So early.
You know, I have gotten like casting notices and stuff from Oxy when she was really, really small.
Yeah. It's just
from
like,
Caitlin. I think you register with a talent agency.
Before the kid's born?
I don't know.
Because how do they get 2 weeks? How do they get a 2-week old? They're probably already like, yup, I got my baby booked. And not even born yet. She's doing two shows.
She's got a commercial.
Yeah, and a movie. It's called Baby, Baby, Baby. It's bullshit, man. That's messed up. Like, how are you already booking your kids?
That's a great question.
Because, like, 2 weeks in, 2 weeks leading up, you're not thinking about, like, anything but, like, delivering.
I remember.
Then you go to delivery, and then you're like, oh, yeah, Darren Star is coming to pick up your kid. It's going to be the baby that, I don't want to spoil it. But anyway, those are just my questions when I watch. So they have the baby, and it is, like, it seems like Kimberly and Maria have done this shit a lot.
Yeah, it does. They whisk like, the right. baby away.
Like, Kimberly, like, hits her with, like, five Spanish lines, like, en fuego. And then she's like, okay. And, like, she just fucking knows. Like, take baby, pick the baby up, wrap it, we're out. Next.
Yeah. Stick, like, to the plan.
That's why she's like, tell me about black market babies. She wanted to know if anyone was up on her, or like they were up on her operation, because she's supplying the babies for the black market. She knew how to do this shit a lot. Like, way good. She was way good at this. She's done this a few times. I know it. That's how she afforded that beach house. She's selling babies.
Yeah. So we are now at the hospital.
Kimberly comes in to do paperwork at the hospital, and she, like, walks into this room with two Macs for, like, the whole hospital, and there's, like, this other doctor there, and she just strolls in all, like, doo-doo-doo, like, hey, George, gotta do some paperwork. And she, like, sits down at her, like, 7-inch, not even, 5-inch Mac, and with, like, I'm just very curious about the security at the Wilshire Memorial. Because it took Kimberly like three clicks to get into, like, the records. I counted. She entered a 5-character password, and then she just goes to whatever.
The morgue records. It said like morgue.
Yeah, it said morgue. Click. That's one click. And then she like scrolls down to whatever that woman's name was.
Cortez.
Double click. And then just types in Reynolds.
And she changes the, I guess, like, the status of the body from like.
To cremated.
Yeah, it was buried. But then she changes it to cremation.
Right. And then just clicks save.
And that's it.
That is it.
I guess that's all you have to do.
She didn't have to write Joe Beth. She didn't have to change an address. She didn't have to change a blood type. She didn't have to change, like, a room number. She didn't have to change, like, urine sample or, like, hot or, like, fucking, like, other nurses and doctors, like, working at the thing, like, to corroborate the story. None of that.
And if it's that easy, why is she, like, sighing to her coworker, like, oh, God, gotta enter
paperwork. Oh, my God, I have to do, like, 30 seconds of paperwork that's actually on the computer. I mean, it's crazy, man. It is crazy. Like, 5 characters for the password.
That's really getting you.
It's simpler than Matt's DUI record changing. It's crazy, insane.
Kimberly is outside of Joe's room, and Amanda and Jake and Jane are all there because presumably they've been called in, and Kimberly is regaling them with this harrowing tale of how on the way to Santa Barbara, Joe goes into labor. They try to make it back to the hospital, but unfortunately the baby was coming. She had to deliver the baby in the back seat, and it was just heartbreaking when she realized the baby was stillborn.
Kimberly is there talking to Amanda, Jane, and Jake.
Mm-hmm.
Why is Amanda there?
Because
they have the
She got caught. I mean, like, I'm sure, like, they have a phone tree or something at Melrose Place that whenever something happens,
hey, Amanda,
they all just call all of the tenants and, like, apprise them of what's going on.
Joe's
so
there,
sometimes you get a mixed bag. Who's ever their home, whoever checks their messages, that's who's going to show up.
Well, yeah, I guess they have that connection where they kidnapped Ted Ramsey. And like almost stabbed
him to
death.
Remember that? They had a very crazy night.
Yeah. Where
they tortured somebody together.
Joe, call the cops. Get him out of here. Yeah, she talked Amanda down from murdering a person.
So Amanda's got to show up to support her.
Yeah, that counts for something. So now we head over to Mancini Designs. Jane calls Chris, and this is a pathetic voicemail. She's like, hey, babe, just...
Me again.
Me again.
Where you been? You know, you said he'd be here, but kind of weird. You haven't shown up. You haven't answered any of my calls, but I guess I'll see you when I get home.
Thought I heard the phone ring. That ever happen to you? Weird.
I love you.
Yeah, so Chris, we can assume that Chris is like... He's making a break for it.
MIA. But you know what he's doing, actually? The next scene, he's paying Sydney a visit, and he has a gift for her.
That he leaves at her door, and then does a little ring and run.
Dan, one says ring and run. It's ding dong ditch, okay?
Okay. Or, what did somebody call it? It was like Doodly Susie or something. Like,
we did a poll on Facebook about this because Dan like vehemently thinks it's called Ring and Run.
Yeah.
And I grew up calling it Ding Dong Ditch.
Right. I mean, the poll spoke for itself. Most people think it's Ding Dong Ditch. But, I mean, sometimes the majority doesn't win.
So there's this box and Chris is like, aren't you gonna open it?
Oi, see, left your box.
I'm Crocodile Dundee. Yeah.
Open the box with my knife.
So she's like, I'd rather eat worms. Get out of here. Yes, Sydney, your sister's at work. Open the box.
Open the box, Sid.
And she's like, ew, I hate their earrings. And she's like, I hate them. And he's like, oh, they're like very expensive, obviously.
Right.
And then she was like, fine, I'll keep them and I'll sell them and give the money and give it to someone who needs it. And he says,
I was thinking that all your charity was given from the waist down.
Oh!
Damn. But that doesn't make sense because she wasn't doing them guys for free. That wasn't charity.
That wasn't charity, baby.
She was selling. So now let's go to Shooters.
The only place where Allison hangs out nowadays.
Allison's getting toe up.
Billy shows up, and immediately Allison says, Billy, I made a mistake. I should have never have left you. And Billy's like, oh, Allison, is this an epiphany you're having?
She says, no, you can tell. I like, if you're thinking these thoughts, you know she's blacked out. She's like, I've come to the conclusion that I need you. What? Let me remind you of the shit that Billy has put you through? Jesus. Remember when he went to your house, to your parents' house, and then tried to fight your ex-boyfriend? And then told everyone at your dad's birthday party that you guys were engaged to be married when you explicitly gave him instructions to not? That sucked. That's just one.
Well, he wants to know why she needs him. And she says, well, before you told me to stop drinking, and I did. You're the only good thing that's ever happened to me, Billy, and we belong together.
What?
And Billy's like, that ship has sailed, girlfriend.
He's not the only good thing that's happened to her. Let me remind you, she got a car for free.
Which she gave back, though.
Yeah, but she got a car. She went scuba diving with Keith.
Mm-hmm.
She experienced the reef. She checked out the
reef.
And
she told Zach that she has been the happiest she's ever been in her life with him.
Yeah, she's had good times without Billy. When dating Billy, she had a lovely hand-in-hand walk with Keith and Steve. Separate occasions. Like, things have been good for her, Allison.
Well, she's not seeing that now, and she's very upset to hear when Billy says that they are not going to get back together, and he is in love with somebody else.
Oh, God.
Referring to Susan.
And she's like, who? Let me guess.
Little Susie? It's
queen of the boyfriend snatchers? Allison's not good at the cut downs.
And then, of course, Billy's like, Allison, what are you drinking? You better stop. She's like, this is soda. And he's like, no, it's not.
And then he's like, your dad, like, let me smell it. Come on. Put your breath on my face.
And then she just chugs it, and she's like, you'll never know. Yeah,
and then she, like, farts and falls off the bar stool. She's like, I know you're drunk. Around here, Susie, that's who you love. Could you just imagine it? She needs to fall more. Like, that's the only thing her drunk is missing. She needs to, like, trip around. And, like, hit a, like, bowl of bar nuts. And then, like, so now, Kimberly is hanging out with Joe's baby.
The baby's crying. Kimberly can't get the baby to stop, and she's trying to console him. And she's like, oh, you're hungry. You're hungry, aren't you? And then at that moment,
lightning crashes.
You can see. She gets the idea. Like, you see it happen across her face. And she's like, well, if you're hungry, I'll just have to feed you then.
And then a crow, like, the windows, like, burst open, and it gets dark real quick. Lightning strikes, and a crow, like, flies in and sits on Kimberly's shoulder. And then she's like, we're gonna feed you. That's what we're gonna do. Yes, we will. And she pulls out her titty, throws that baby on it to latch, and is just like deadpanning into the camera, like rocking back and forth. Like, do you remember The Witch?
Yeah. I knew you were good as soon as you started talking about the crow.
Maybe that's why I talk about it so much, of like the crow coming in. Remember, she was like, the mom thought she was breastfeeding
a baby, but she was breastfeeding she wasn't breastfeeding a crow. It was just pecking off her nipple.
Oh, God. That imagery, like, freaked me out. Yeah, and she's laughing. Remember? She's like, ah!
Yeah.
And a crow just like,
okay,
fucking biting her nipple off. Oh, my God. If you haven't seen The Witch, you should see it.
If you like horror movies.
Yeah. But anyway, so I'm a man, of course, but I know that's not how milk works.
Nope.
You can't just throw a baby on a nipple.
If you're not lactating, it doesn't matter how much somebody can suck your nipple, it's not going to produce milk.
Unless she's like, I'm also a wet nurse. Like, well, wet nurse somebody, on the side.
That is someone who has gotten pregnant, had their own baby, and then just continued to lactate.
Just kept it up.
Because you can. You can keep it up after you've had a child for, like, indefinitely. If you just let it keep.
I hate how they, like you call a wet bar, and like, wet nurse. That's what I think of. Like, what? You're a wet nurse.
That's, like, old terminology from, like, the Renaissance.
What are they? Do they still have them?
I don't think so.
Yeah, it's kind of gross.
I mean, it's coming back where women, like, will sell their breast milk online and stuff.
What?
That is a thing.
Yuck.
That's a thing.
It doesn't have to get checked or anything?
I don't know.
You just buy people's breast milk?
I don't know how it really works, but I know it is a thing.
Would you buy, like, Would you buy a gallon of like cow's milk on the internet?
Probably not.
So why'd you buy a human's? Oh man.
Because you can't get human milk in the Walmart.
I guess so. But yeah, so she is like, we knew this was going to happen, but she is like full, like, this is kind of my baby right now.
So next scene, Zach shows up to Allison's house.
And he has fixed her car. And Jenny, I know Shayna took your side and was like, I'm with you, Jenny. Zach is hot, but he is not hot.
Okay.
His hair.
It's like his hair is the only thing that's not working for him. It's like this wispy. Yeah.
It's like marionette hair. Like that is like the hair you pick up at like a barber shop and like glue it on a marionette. The front of his hair is like pubic hair. Damn. It is nasty. It is so thin. It's so coarse. It's like a Brillo pad. Like that you used for like a year. Oh shit. Man. But like, isn't that sad that like you could look at him and be like, it looks like your hair has washed dishes for 365 days.
You know, I get what you're saying about his hair, but he does have those eyes.
I can't. I cannot get past the
when
top.
She did open the door, I was kind of like, ooh.
It's like poodle hair. Like wind like really takes it. You know?
Yeah.
It is very just, puff.
I get what you're saying.
It's just like a puff of hair. It's really, it's sad. It's sad.
Okay, so Allison is not too pleased to see him, and she thinks that, you know, from the last time they spoke, he's kind of done a 180. We can assume that he probably wasn't very supportive of Allison after she hit this kid in the street.
Yeah. No, and no talk of like, hey, what happened Thanksgiving night when I had to drive around for an hour?
She while your let friends me home. Hung out with you. So she's like, you know what? I thought you'd be there for me. I thought that you would support me, and you obviously weren't, and I'm not happy with you. And he cops up to it and he goes, you know what? You're right. I wasn't there for you, but I'm here now. I'm back and I got your car fixed and I really want to try to make things work with you.
What's it going to take, babe? You want a couple of my rings? Like I have like 20 in the car. So she starts to like take him back. Like, all right. And she's like, well, you're just in time to drive me to court. So let's go.
How convenient.
Yeah. Now, Kimberly and Joe are being questioned in the hospital, and they're really nailing this explanation of stillborn kiddo. And I wrote down, my note here was like, that plane ticket to New York, I think is going to come back to bite her that she purchased or called in.
That's a great prediction and a really good observation. And for now, this guy, I think he's the lawyer for the Carters. He just really wants to get to the bottom of what happened. They both tell the story about how they were on the road. The stillborn happened. The baby has been actually cremated. So,
and the Carters have asked, they're really sad and they want to pay for the burial.
And they say that's not necessary. The baby's already been cremated. That's it. And Joe makes a point to say, please tell the Carters that I do not want any further contact with them ever.
Mm.
Which I can understand that.
And then the lawyer or cop or I don't know. He's like, well, I'm going to have to look into it further, but my condolences. I'm very sorry. Yada, yada, yada. And then he leaves the room and they immediately are like celebrating.
Yeah. I mean, like, immediately
we did it.
Like he walks out and Kimberly just starts doing this like little giggle And she's like, oh, we did it. They bought it. Can you believe it? Yeah.
And again, where's Michael? He had to have come home.
I don't know, Dan. He was on a long shift that whole weekend, remember?
How long is this shift?
Well, sometimes being a doctor, it's like 48 hours.
Well, and he's at the hospital. Where is he? They're always at their lockers. You know?
There, yeah. They had to give Thomas Calabro a day off, okay?
I guess so, yeah. He's working hard. So Allison is at court. Judge Greenberg is presiding. And, I mean, she just gets off like a bandit.
Yeah, so basically they find her on, like, they charge her with a misdemeanor. And they put her on probation and they give her a fine. And that's, like, it.
That is it.
That's it for hitting a kid while you were drunk. That's a 90s moment.
That is too much. Yeah, she would definitely go down.
It's very lenient.
So Judge Greenberg was played by Warren Munson. And he is known for Friday the 13th, part 7. No, part 8. He played Admiral Robertson. He was in Scrubs. He was Mr. Taylor. He was on The Young and the Restless for a long time. He was the Justice of the Peace. Star Trek Voyager. Port Charles. Sybil. Good career. Solid career. But he is the one who is super loosey-goose with Allison on the stand. And just slap on the wrist for hitting a kid drunk as fuck. How, like...
crazy.
And I wish the kid was at court.
Me too, that she'd have to face him or his family or his parents or something.
Yeah, like in a neck brace or something.
Yeah, I really thought that this was going to be a bigger deal.
Nope. She's good. Totally fine. Probation.
So next up, Jane is visiting the bank and she's learning that over 20 checks have bounced due to not having sufficient funds in the bank. She's so surprised. She's talking to the banker saying that this is impossible. The banker's like, well, get ready because there's going to be a lot more checks that are going to bounce because there is $0 in your bank account.
And she is so oblivious. Just like, well, it can't be because Chris just deposited a check for $500,000.
And the banker's like, oh no, Miss Mancini, I think you've been mistaken. Chris didn't deposit that check. He cashed that check.
And I don't think that's possible.
That's a lot of money to cash. I think you have to arrange it ahead of time.
And they advise against it. You would have to meet with armed people in the bank vault. And they'd be like, are you all right? Is there a hostage? Do you need assistance?
Maybe he went through all of that. Maybe he's been planning this.
Yeah, so that check's been cashed. Finally, Jane is like, maybe Chris isn't good. Wait a minute.
This isn't good news at all.
Yeah. So now we cut over to Sydney. She's shopping. She's got a bunch of bags in her hand, and she's just walking, and then she just gets snatched up and yanked into a limousine that Chris is in.
Yeah.
And he's like, oi, Sid, I love that you're wearing those earrings.
And she is. Is that weird? Some creepy, horrible guy that tried to, number one,
she likes
tried,
the good life.
Raped you and then, blackmailed you and made you have sex with him. You're like, oh, yeah, I'll wear the earrings that you got me.
She's into that good life.
I don't know, man. If someone did me like that, I'd be like, hell no. Get out of my life. But she's wearing them. She's wearing the earrings.
Yeah, she gets pulled in. Chris is super happy she's wearing the earrings. And he's like, let's go.
So she's kidnapped.
Yeah. We don't know what's going on with her. Now we go to D&D to learn that the ad firm that was merging with D&D has pulled out. Bruce is destroyed.
Apparently, somebody leaked to the general public about this merger. That, in turn, caused the stock to go up. And now everybody's pulling out of it because it's just too expensive.
And then Bruce delivers a very important line. He says, They say the most dangerous enemy is one standing right in front of you.
And who should be standing right in front of him but Amanda?
Amanda. And he says, he goes on, he's like, only three people knew about Banfield and Lee. And that was me, Banfield and Lee.
And you.
And you. And we know that Banfield and Lee wouldn't leak it. I wouldn't leak it. So it's you, bitch. And guess what? You don't work here no more.
Yeah, so Amanda just denies. I don't know what you're getting at or what you're implying, but these accusations are totally incorrect, Bruce. And he just cuts her off and is like, why? Why, Amanda? Why would you do this to me? Why? And he just says, you're fired. And I don't want to see your traitorous face here ever again.
Yikes. And yeah, wow. Amanda, for the first time in Melrose Place, is jobless. She doesn't have a job.
Very weird position for her to be in, and I'm kind of scared to see what Peter is going to do to her.
Yeah, Peter's going to be like, how was work? I don't have a job anymore. What?
I think he's going to, like,
I can't get an erection if you don't have a job. Come on, tell me the three.
Three types of
weakness. Come on. We got
emotional, physical.
We've got lambs to sacrifice here. How am I supposed to get horny if you're not working? So Jake knocks on Jane's door looking for Sydney. She hasn't shown up. Because she's been kidnapped.
Right. So she's no call, no showing over at Shooters. And then, of course, Jake is getting worried about her. And Jane is like, why are you coming to me? Well, I've asked everybody else. Nobody knows where she is. And now Jane's kind of putting two and two together. And she thinks that Sydney and Chris are in cahoots together. And she tells Jake, well, don't you see, Jake? We've been had. Both of them. They've played us for fools.
Chris and Sydney are gone.
Just and along, like, with my $500,000.
Just like Michael and Robert, they are gone. And that's where we leave them. I don't think Jake is going to believe it. I think Super Jake's got to show up and investigate this.
I agree.
He's going to get down to the bottom of it.
So it's a few days after Joe's delivered the baby, and she's ready to put her plan in action. She's going to get her baby boy, jump on that plane to New York, and start a new life. But first, she needs to pick him up from Kimberly's house.
So she goes to the door for the first time ever in Melrose Place history. The door is locked.
Can you believe it? That no one can barge into the beach house. So Kimberly comes to the door. She's got the baby to her chest. She's rocking him. She opens the door and the chain is on the door. So the chain, like, it's preventing her. And she's like, oh, hi, Joe. What can I do for you?
And Joe's like, I'm just here to pick up the baby.
Like I planned. And then Kimberly says, oh, Joe, you must be having postpartum depression. Your baby died, remember?
And she's like, I'd be happy to prescribe some antidepressants for your loss. Come see me during business hours.
Okay. And then, of course, Joe is like, what? Like, she's totally blindsided. She did not see this coming. And then Kimberly even continues with this and with this whole ruse and says, well, Joe, your baby is dead and I have the death certificate that you signed to prove it.
And immediately my brain goes to, where's Michael? Michael, come home quick.
So that is where we leave the episode.
There's DNA all over that house of Joe.
Well, I know, but I mean, this is like the infantile stages of using DNA to, like, really to solve crimes and stuff.
But if I was Joe, call the cops. Go to your nearest payphone, put a quarter in, call the cops, and be like, this woman stole my baby.
But then the baby's just going to get over to the Carters.
Oh, yeah, true. And the Carters just swoop in.
Yeah. Either way, she's totally screwed. But if Kimberly has it, there's maybe an underhanded way she can get the baby back.
Or Joe gets her gun, holds him up.
Now we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, Dan.
She does her jaw clench talking. Give me my baby.
But like really low and soft. Give me my baby.
Yeah, that's Joe Reynolds. That's the Joe we know. Get out.
Well, save it for predictions, okay? Because now we're going to recap.
Right. Recapping, Allison gets a DUI and Billy bails her out of jail.
But Allison does get off with just a fine and probation and tries to get Billy back.
Joe has her baby.
And Kimberly convinces everybody that her baby's dead.
Chris runs away with 500 grand.
And Chris then kidnaps Sydney.
Bruce fires Amanda.
And then Kimberly steals Joe's baby.
Allison wants Billy back. Then she doesn't. Where is Michael?
Where is Matt?
Oh, yeah. Where's Matt and Jeffrey?
I don't know.
Like, Matt works at the hospital, too. Come on. All right. 90s moments.
The cops, their mustaches, their walkie-talkies.
The mutant tattooed lady at the jail.
Hearing an actual dial tone on a phone.
Joe's cordless phone.
The Donna Karen reference.
Calling to book a flight.
The Breakfast of Champions reference.
Wheaties is still the Breakfast of Champions. Sydney's baggy ass jeans.
Bruce's white ass carpet.
Chris's limo. That limo's supposed to be the shit. I'm pretty sure I rode in that limo for homecoming at high school.
Yeah. Jane's fluffy bows and scrunchies.
Ooh, yeah.
She had a lot of those. So, Dan, lesson. What did you learn from this episode?
I learned don't trust a conniving doctor who desperately wants a baby to deliver yours illegally and give it to you.
I have never trust Kimberly Shaw with a child.
All right. It's pretty much the same.
We're pretty much in line there.
Now it is time for Bitch of the Week!
I'm a boss ass bitch, 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 bitch. I'm a boss ass bitch.
Last week, guys, Jenny, you said that Zach was the bitch. And I said that Billy was the bitch of the week. And since I forgot to post the poll on Twitter, with a vote of 13-5, I've been dethroned. Zach's the bitch of the week.
Oh, I thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what do you guys have to say about it? Let's start with Zach. He said he hasn't listened to the podcast yet, but I don't
Shame
even
you,
need to hear Jenny and Dan's arguments to know that Billy is the bitch. And Susan, you don't invite a friend and her friend over for Thanksgiving dinner only to use his absence as an opportunity to ambush them about their life choices and talk smack about their plus one that you were totally okay with having in your home 2 minutes earlier. Allison made a huge effort to be there. And the first thing they did was cut into her. And then Billy calls her out for being loaded. Allison wasn't even that drunk when she showed up and probably needed that tall glass of vodka to calm her nerves to even go up there in the first place. Shame on you, Billy and Susan. Yes, Allison needs help and they probably had the best intentions, but holy fuck, was that a poor execution? All it ended up doing was pushing her further away, and as an indirect result of that bitchiness, acting like a parent, Billy, when Allison was basically raising you 2 years earlier. Yes.
Yeah, that was spot on.
Very good.
Kevin says, Zach, Jenny's argument was perfect.
Oh, thank you.
This guy is the absolute worst. drive around for an hour until my friends leave? What? Jenny was right. He had no intention of ever showing up for that awful Thanksgiving dinner that Susan prepared. And I think he is to blame for Allison running over that poor innocent child slash adult stunt double. The worst part, I can't even vote for Billy because this guy is so terrible. And that's very upsetting. And then I said, when in doubt, vote Billy.
Okay, Viv says, first of all, Dan, and she gives you a round of applause. Mm-hmm. I was so happy to hear Billy's name. I didn't need to hear both argument. I'm always going to go with Billy and Susan on this one. I agree with Dan's decision. I find Billy's condescending attitude toward Allison so irritating. He's the one who cut ties with Allison, plays rebound roulette with her ex-boyfriend, ex-BF Susan, and all of a sudden wants to, quote, make peace, unquote, with Allison just to take digs about her choices. I was so annoyed at Billy for kissing Amanda's ass while throwing Allison under the bus on missing work, her drinking, and on the new car she spent. He's gonna rat out Allison like that and later feign concern about her actions with Susan. I see you, Billy. I was always wondering what the hell that Billy was doing rushing through the garbage like that while he was waiting for Allison to leave her apartment.
Just rummaging, being a
it's
bitch.
It's so true, Viv. What was he doing? Was he being nosy and maybe checking to see if there's any empty vodka bottles? That is a really great assumption. I did not think about that. That Thanksgiving dinner turned into an epic fail. What a surprise. And of course, the intervention against Allison since Zach didn't make it. Two against one is not a smart choice, Billy. Zach is an enabling douchebag, but I'm not surprised by his actions. Allison could have cut him loose, but again, she's always attracted to the wrong men. Remember Keith, her shrink, her one night stand, and Zach of all people.
Donald said, yes, Billy for the win. He's such an asshole in this ep. How can he judge Allison? This is the same guy who started to date a girl he met in his taxi. He has no right to judge her when he's dating her best friend. She even said to him, I don't think this is a good idea. And he's like, oh, come on, give us a chance. Why in the hell would she do that? He hurt her. He knows that. Just leave her alone. What a bitch. Thanks, guys. Great ep. You made my day. You made me laugh when I wanted to cry. And for that, thank you.
Oh, well, we love doing it for you, Donald. And thank you for listening.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry says, I'm going to go with Jenny Hill on this one. I vote Zach Phillips for Bitch of the Week for sure. First of all, Zach has just met Allison and has only known her for a short time, and he is practically taking charge of Allison's life and making her decisions for her on whether or not she should go to her workplace of business. Is he really freaking kidding me? Who the hell does this guy think he is? Telling Allison not to report to her job and play hooky with him and then talk her into an impulse shopping of a brand new car, knowing full well she probably could not possibly afford it. And he had the nerve to call Allison's job to talk to her boss Amanda and make Allison take a sick day off to play hooky. Not even once was he concerned that she could possibly get fired or lose her job over this. And Zach is encouraging Allison to drink a lot, knowing full well that she is an alcoholic. And to top it all off, he blew off Allison by not showing off to Thanksgiving dinner. And he was supposed to be at with Allison and try to be her friend. And he did not even try to call her and let her know he was not coming. Instead, he hangs out with his friends at his place. He does not care at all about Allison's feelings. He knew he was taking full advantage of her heart and her mind. And then he left Allison hanging, which contributed to her drinking problem even more. Yes, Zach, you are the total bitch of the week. And by the way, Jenny and Dan Hill, the original song heard at the beginning of the episode is called Ordinary Angels, sung by Frente. And the original song heard in the next scene when the extortionist goes into Shooters asking where who Jake is was the song Baby I Can't Please You by Sam Phillips. And by the way, those two songs are from the Melrose Place soundtrack CD, which I own, and it's still available for purchase on Amazon.
Nice.
Thanks, Sherry, for that hot tip.
Shayna says, this was a hard one for me. I was all for Billy until I heard Jenny's argument, but in the end, I still chose Billy. I think Zach is more of a scumbag than a bitch, but Billy... Well, Billy's always a little bitch.
Well, I can't argue with you there, Shayna. He is a little bitch through and through. Niall says, I don't know where this anti-guy with rings things come from, but I love guys wearing rings.
Oh, stop it, Niall.
If they wear eyeliner and listen to graveyard music, so much the better. Just imagine all the guys looking like socially acceptable Matt. I can't and I won't. But I'm getting carried away. Allison is in the punk rock phase of her life, and Billy just belittles her the whole fucking time. Why immediately assume that she cannot pay for a car? And if you are assuming that, then why help her almost getting fired by verbalizing your assumptions in front of her landlord and boss? I think that's what made me upset the most. He's continuously pointing to her downfall and then pushes her one step more toward the edge. Billy is such a bitch. Niles, I gotta agree with you. Okay, we talk a lot about Zach and his hair is one thing. The rings are another thing, but I kind of like that dark, like, punk rock, gothy, Brillo Chris Angel. Like, I kind of like that, where it's like, welcome to the dark side. And I get what you're saying. Matt is so vanilla. Like, all the guys are so like, oh, I'm just ordinary and I wear flannel shirts.
And there's a happy medium between Chris Angel and Matt Fielding. There's a lot of gray area. I'm not saying that. No, I'm not saying you got to have no rings. I'm saying you can't rock 10 rings.
I don't know. I think it's funny, but I get what you're saying. We need those crazy kind of ancillary characters to mix it up a little bit. So, with all that being said, since I'm the winner, I guess I'll go into my bitch of the week. I nominate Dr. Kimberly Shaw. I don't even think you need to ask me why, guys. I think we all know why Kimberly is the bitch this week. First off, she concocts this entire plan to steal Joe's baby. That in itself, even thinking about doing something like this and really putting a plan into action is like, number one, what a bitchy thing to do. But what about baby Cortez, okay? Here is this poor mother. She has to go through the pain and suffering of delivering a stillborn baby, and you are going to erase that baby out of history, out of the records. That baby was supposed to be buried. Remember when Kimberly went in and she changed the records and she made it to cremation instead of being buried? What if that baby's parents have some sort of like moral thing against having their baby cremated? Maybe they wanted to have a service for the baby. Maybe that baby got cremated before they had their opportunity to say goodbye to their child. Okay? That's number one. Secondly, roping in Maria to all of this, Maria is now an accessory to this horrible plan.
Maria done this before.
Maria probably had no idea to what degree she was getting herself into. She probably thought, oh, I work with Kimberly at work. She's a nice girl. She needs help. And now poor Maria could go to jail for this. And she's putting Maria's whole life at stake and her professional livelihood and her reputation at stake as well. And then, of course, breastfeeding that baby. Guys, we went over this. She's not lactating. Number one, it's creepy as hell to try to put another, like, put a baby on your breast if you're not trying to feed it. And that baby isn't getting fed. Hello? It's not getting fed. So I hope she has a plan B, because if she doesn't, that kid isn't eating. And then lastly, denying Joe her child, totally having this whole plan come full circle, and then playing the old, you're crazy, you have postpartum depression, you signed papers saying that your baby died, and it did. You know, Dan talks about this a lot, where people, if you're told that you're crazy by so many people, you might start to think you're crazy. And that's a horrible thing to do to somebody, withholding their own child from them and trying to pretend like they are the crazy one. All of those reasons, I think it's pretty clear cut. Kimberly is the bitch of this week.
My bitch of the week is none other than Allison Parker. Here's why. For trying to crawl back to Billy after she gets out of jail. She's like, oh, Billy, we should be together again. What? No. You need to stand your ground and fuck Billy. Billy sucks. You're over him. It's done. Also, she's definitely a bitch for not caring about that little boy that she hit and ruined Thanksgiving for that entire family. She's a bitch for going straight to the booze after she gets out of jail. And she's a mega bitch for being outraged that Amanda pulled her off an important account. Look, if you're not at work, how can you do the work? You don't deserve the work. You're being a bitch. You're being a bitch to your ex-friend, Susan, calling her round heel Susie again. And you were kind of a bitch at the bar when Billy was like, what are you drinking? And then you just slugged it and you're like, guess you'll never know. She needs AA. You're being a big old bitch, Allison. So you can vote tomorrow on Facebook and Twitter at Melrose Pod for this week's Bitch of the Week.
So we have the rename. This episode was called The Doctor That Rocks the Cradle, which I like. I mean, it's a homage to The Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
Homage? It's a ripoff. They ripped it. They ripped it as much as the breastfeeding scene.
That scene always stuck with me. That was so creepy. And when Kimberly does it, it's like, that's totally
the only way to rip it off more would be if Joe pushed Kimberly out of a window and she fell on a picket fence.
Well, okay. But I think...
Spoiler alert.
That
that happens on Hand the Rocks the Cradle.
That naming the episode, that kind of does give the credit to where they got that idea, these ideas from. But if you had to rename this episode, Dan, what would you call it?
I'd rename it Snatch and Grab, because Chris snatches the money and grabs Sydney. Peter and Amanda, they try to snatch each other and grab D&D. And then Kimberly obviously snatches and grabs the baby.
Very clever. I like that. Mine's kind of along those lines, but not as thoughtful. Hmm. Beware of the baby snatcher.
Cool.
Okay, so predictions. What do we think we're going to see in upcoming episodes?
Michael is going to come home at some point, and he's going to say something on the lines of, Kimberly, where'd you get that baby? We're going to need to talk about that. And he's going to say that, and he's going to have something to say about Chris Marchette stealing $500,000 from a company that he owns a portion of. Mm-hmm. And I think that both of these things are what break him and Kimberly up and put him back helping Jane.
Really?
Yeah, I think at some point he's getting back to Jane.
Whoa.
Yeah, because, I mean, they just can't. They got to mix it up. I bet they obviously like have run out of things with Michael, and they're just like, yeah, we kind of don't need you, but we'll put you in somehow. I think Allison gets more responsibility at D&D now that Amanda has been fired. But I think it'll be like a great little like minute and a half for Allison. Like, yay, you're back to D&D. And now you're the boss. But wait, Peter and Amanda bought D&D. And then Amanda's going to come in and be like, do the dishes. And I think Billy and Susan break up.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that Susan is going to get really fed up that she's kind of playing second fiddle to Allison and that Billy is still kind of dropping everything to help her. I think she's leaving soon. I think Amanda is going to get Banfield and Lee to reconsider the deal, and she's going to make the merger go through, which in turn is going to patch things up with Bruce, and then she's going to be back on top again, and then back in D&D. I think that Chris is going to take Sid to Vegas and basically make her a sex slave and like keep her like kidnapped and like imprisoned somewhere. And then she is going to somehow call Jake. And like you said, Jake is going to be the hero. He's going to come rescue her. And then everything is going to be revealed that Chris is this crazy con man. He's going to go to jail and somehow Jane's going to get her money back and she's going to be able to right the ship with Jane Mancini Designs. And I think that Joe is going to somehow try to go to the police and the hospital to complain about this, but they're just going to write her off as having postpartum depression and they're not going to take everything seriously. Because I don't know how we're going to get out of that. I think Michael coming home and being like, what's going on here is going to be one thing. But it's like, how do we get out of Kimberly having the baby?
The baby's got to go away. The baby has to go away and it has to break Michael and Kimberly up. There's no way that Michael will be like, we have a baby now.
Cool. I don't care where you got this baby.
Yeah. So he's going to be like, look, you can't steal babies. All right.
I draw the line somewhere and it's stealing babies.
So maybe Kimberly like runs off with it. Or maybe the Carters get wind of it. And maybe the Carters like they take it. Joe stays on. I mean, you know, we know that Joe's going to continue to be on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And this baby is not. So I don't think they'll kill another baby.
Yeah, I hope they don't.
Yeah.
All things to look out for in upcoming episodes.
Or maybe there's some loophole that, like, she can put it up for adoption. I don't know. Who knows? In other news, sad news, Heather Locklear is really going down a dark path.
It's really sad.
Yeah, it's not good when your life resembles what's happening on Melrose Place.
Yeah, but she's arrested again.
Yeah,
today, right?
I think today. Yeah, she was like hammered, drunk, and the police got called because she was saying that she was going to commit suicide. Ended up punching a cop and kicking an EMT when they were trying to help her, and it's just a mess, man. If you know, it sucks to see your. I know a lot of you guys and us. Heather Locklear is pretty important to Melrose Place.
Oh my gosh, she turned it around. She made it what it is.
And yeah,
it is really tough to see her hurting so much. And, you know, I mean, she's saying that she's going to commit suicide. That's really serious business. So really, our hearts and our prayers do go out to her. And we really hope that she's doing better. And hopefully we don't see her making headlines in these ways.
Yeah, man. And anymore. Like I thought I was seeing the same news, but it's two separate occasions.
Mm-hmm.
She's just getting like too drunk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not good. Guys, you got to join our Facebook group. Get in there. Alyssa said it's about to get really good. Hold on to your butts.
Yay!
Yeah. So we dropped our video of our gift that we got from Justin, like we said we would, and we did a little unboxing there in the Facebook group. Shayna said that she's with you, and she thinks that Zach is hot.
Thank you, Shayna.
Gross, but okay. And Greg, he posted a picture of Allison, like, from episode 2 or something, where she's, like, painting the house. Mm. And he's like, remember when Allison's biggest problem was choosing a color for her walls?
Yeah, it's really come a long way from that beginning.
Yeah, so
a lot of fun stuff happens there. So, of course, yeah, join times. In. And guys, if you haven't written a review, write one. That is the best way for us to get visible, to get more listeners. And of course, we're always trying to grow the podcast and reach out to more people. So if you like what you hear, we'd really appreciate it if you would leave a 5-star review.
Leave us a little review. And we're on Patreon, patreon.com/MelrosePod. If you want to contribute, give us a buck. We got bonus episodes for you and a little videos and whatnot. So get on there and hit us up at MelrosePod, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or you can email us, MelrosePod@gmail.com.
We love smut.
And we love you.